Let's begin our study of story with definitions. Story, in its grandest sense, means life story. From an instant to eternity, from the intracranial to the intergalactic, the life story of each and every character offers encyclopedic possibilities. The mark of a master is to select only a few moments, but give us a lifetime. When a character steps into a writer's imagination, he brings with him an abundance of story possibilities. If the writer wished, he could start the telling before his character is born, then follow him day after day, decade after decade, until dead and gone. A character's life encompasses hundreds of thousands of living hours, hours both complex and multi-leveled. Starting at the deepest level, the writer might set the story within the protagonist's inner life and tell the whole tale inside his thoughts and feelings, awake or dreaming. Or the writer could shift up to the level of personal conflict between the protagonist and family, friends, lovers, or expand into social institutions, setting his character at odds with school, career, church, the justice system. Or wider still, he could pit his character against the environment, dangerous city streets, lethal diseases, the car that won't start, time running out, or any combination of all these levels. But this complex expanse of story life must become the story told. To design a feature film, the writer reduces this seething mass and rush of the life story to just two little hours, more or less, that somehow express everything he left out. To structure means to choose. From the vast flux of life story, the writer must make choices. Fictional worlds are not daydreams, but sweatshops, where we labor in search of material to tailor a film. Yet when asked, "What do you choose?" no two writers agree. Some look for character, others for action or strife, perhaps mood, images, dialogue. But no one element in and of itself will build a story. A film isn't just moments of conflict or activity, personality or emotionality, witty talk or symbols. What the writer seeks are events, for an event contains all of the above and more. Structure means event choices. We seek the events of life because the event is caused by or affects people, thus delineating characters. It takes place in a setting, generating image, action, and dialogue. It draws energy from conflict, producing emotion in characters and audience alike. Story events create meaningful change in a character's life. To make change meaningful, the writer must express it, and the audience must react to it, in terms of a value. By values, I mean those universal qualities of human experience that may shift from positive to negative, or negative to positive, from one moment to the next. Alive-dead is a story value, as are love-hate, freedom-slavery, wisdom-stupidity, truth-lie, courage-cowardice, loyalty-betrayal, and so on. All such binary qualities of experience that can reverse their charge from one moment to the next are story values. They may be moral, good-evil, ethical, right-wrong, or simply charged with value. Hope-despair is neither moral nor ethical, but we certainly know when we're in one end of the experience or the other. A story event creates meaningful change in the life situation of a character that's expressed and experienced in terms of a value and achieved through conflict. For a typical film, the writer will choose 40 to 60 story events, or, as they're commonly known, scenes. Ideally, every scene is a true story event. Look closely at each scene you've written and ask, what value is at stake in my character's life at this moment? Love? Truth? What? How is that value charged at the top of the scene? Positive? Negative? Some of both? Take a note. Next, turn to the close of the scene and ask, where now is this value? Positive? Negative? Both? Take a note and compare. If the answer you write down at the end of the scene is the same note you took at the opening, you now have another question to ask. Why is this scene in my script? If the value charge condition of the character's life stays unchanged from one end of the scene to the other, nothing meaningful happens. The scene has activity, talking about this, doing that, but nothing changes in value. It is a non-event. Why then is the scene in the story? The answer is almost certain to be exposition. It's there to convey information about characters, world, or history to the eavesdropping audience. If exposition is a scene's sole justification, a disciplined writer will trash it and weave its information into the film elsewhere. No scene that doesn't turn. This is our ideal. We work to round every scene from beginning to end by turning the values at stake in the character's life from the positive to the negative, or from the negative to the positive. Adherence to this principle may be difficult, but it's by no means impossible. Die Hard, The Fugitive, and Straw Dogs clearly meet this test, but the ideal is also kept in subtler, though no less rigorous ways in Remains of the Day and The Accidental Tourist. The difference is that action genres turn on public values such as freedom, slavery, or justice, injustice. The education genre turns on interior values such as self-awareness, self-deception, or life is meaningful, meaningless. Regardless of genre, the principle is universal. If a scene is not a true event, cut it. A scene is an action through conflict, in more or less continuous time and space, that turns the value charge condition of the character's life on at least one value. For example, Chris and Andy are in love and live together. They wake up one morning and start to squabble. Their spat builds in the kitchen as they hurry to make breakfast. In the garage, the fight gets really nasty as they climb in their car to drive to work together. Finally, things explode into violence on the highway. Andy wrenches the car to the shoulder and jumps out, ending their relationship. This series of actions and locations creates a scene. It takes the couple from the positive, in love and together, to the negative, in hate and apart. The four shifts of place, bedroom to kitchen to garage to highway, are camera setups, but not true scenes. Although they intensify behavior and make the critical moment credible, they do not change the values at stake. As the argument moves through the morning, the couple is still together and presumably in love. But when the action reaches its turning point, a slamming car door and Andy's declaration, "It's over," life turns upside down for the lovers, activity changes to action, and the sketch becomes a true scene, a story event. Generally, the test of whether or not a series of activities constitutes a true scene is this: could it have been written in one, in a unity of time and place? In this case, the answer is yes. Their argument could begin in the bedroom, build in the bedroom, and end the relationship in the bedroom. Countless relationships have ended in bedrooms. Or end in the kitchen, or the garage, or not on the highway, but in the office elevator. A playwright might write the scene in one because the staging limitations of the theater often force us to keep to the unities of time and place. The novelist or screenwriter, on the other hand, might travel the scene, parsing it out in time and space to establish future locations, Chris's taste in furniture, Andy's driving habits, for any number of reasons. This scene could even cross-cut with another scene, perhaps involving another couple. The variations are endless, but in all cases, this is a single story event, the lovers' breakup scene. Inside the scene is the smallest element of structure, the beat. Taking a closer look at the lovers' breakup scene. As the alarm goes off, Chris teases Andy and he reacts in kind. As they dress, teasing turns to sarcasm and they throw insults back and forth. Now in the kitchen, Chris threatens Andy with, "If I left you, baby, you'd be so miserable." But he calls her bluff with, "That's a misery I'd love." In the garage, Chris, afraid she's losing him, begs Andy to stay, but he laughs and ridicules her plea. Finally, in a speeding car, Chris doubles her fist and punches Andy. A fight, a squeal of brakes, Andy jumps out with a bloody nose, slams the door, and shouts, "It's over." This scene is built around five distinctively different behaviors, five clear changes of action-reaction. Teasing one another, followed by a give-and-take of insults, then threatening and daring each other, next pleading and ridiculing, and finally exchanges of violence that lead to the turning point, Andy's decision to end the relationship. A beat is an exchange of behavior in action-reaction. Beat by beat, these changing behaviors shape the turning of a scene. Beats build scenes. Scenes then build the next largest movement of story design, the sequence. Every true scene turns the value-charged condition of the character's life. But from event to event, the degree of change can differ greatly. Scenes cause relatively minor yet significant change. The capping scene of a sequence, however, delivers a more powerful, determinant change. A sequence is a series of scenes, generally 2 to 5, that culminates with greater impact than any previous scene. For example, this 3-scene sequence. Setup. A young businesswoman who's had a notable career in the Midwest has been approached by headhunters and interviewed for a position in a New York corporation. If she wins this post, it'll be a huge step up in her career. She wants the job very much, but hasn't won it yet. She is one of 6 finalists. The corporate heads realize that this position has a vital public dimension to it, so they want to see these applicants on their feet in an informal setting before making the final decision. They invite all 6 to a party on Manhattan's East Side. Scene 1. A West Side hotel where our protagonist prepares for the evening. The value at stake is self-confidence, self-doubt. She'll need all her confidence to pull this evening off with success, but she's filled with doubts. Negative. Fear knots her middle as she paces the room, telling herself she was a fool to come east. These New York sharks will eat her alive. She flings clothes out of her suitcase, trying on this, trying on that, but each thing looks worse than the thing before. Her hair is an uncombable tangle of frizz. As she grapples with her clothes and hair, she decides to pack it in and save herself the humiliation. Then a guilt-tripping phone call from her mother reminds her of yet another reason she needs this job. New York sharks are formidable, but can't compare with the great white back home. Suddenly, she amazes herself with a combination of clothes and accessories she's never tried before. Her hair falls magically into place. She plants herself in front of the mirror, looking great, eyes bright, glowing with confidence. Positive. Scene 2. Under the hotel marquee. Thunder, lightning, pelting down rain. Because she's from Terre Haute, she didn't know to tip the doorman $5 when she registered, so he won't go out into the storm to find her a cab. Besides, when it rains in New York, there are no cabs. So she studies her visitor's map, pondering what to do. She realizes if she tries to run from the West 80s over to Central Park West, then all the way down CPW to 59th Street, across Central Park South to Park Avenue, and up into the East 80s, she'll never get to this party on time. So she decides to do what they warn you never, ever to do, to run through Central Park at night. The second scene takes on a new value, life, death. She covers her hair with a newspaper and darts into the night, daring death, negative. A lightning flash and bang, she's surrounded by that gang that's always out there, rain or shine, waiting for the fools who run through the park at night. But she didn't take those karate classes for nothing. She kick-fights her way through the gang, breaking jaws, scattering teeth on the concrete, until she stumbles out of the park alive. Positive. Scene 3. A mirrored lobby, Park Avenue apartment building. The value at stake now switches to social success, social failure. She survived, but then she looks in a mirror and sees a drowned rat. Newspaper shredded in her hair, blood all over her clothes. The gang's blood, but blood nonetheless. Her self-confidence plunges past doubt and fear until she bows in personal defeat, negative, crushed by her social disaster, negative. Just then, taxis pull up with the other applicants. All found cabs, all get out looking New York chic. They take pity on her and usher her into an elevator. But as she ascends, from deep within her comes a chutzpah she never knew she had. She not only tells them about her battle in the park, but makes jokes about it. In the penthouse, they towel off her hair and find mismatched clothes for her to wear. And because she looks like this, the spotlight's on her all night, and because she knows she's lost anyway, she relaxes into her natural self. As she tells of her adventure to the curious, mouths go slack with awe or wide with laughter. At the end of the evening, all the executives know exactly who they want for the job. Anyone who can go through that terror in the park and display this kind of cool half an hour later is clearly the person for them. The evening ends on her personal and social triumphs as she's given the job, doubly positive. Each scene turns on its own values. Scene one, self-doubt to self-confidence. Scene two, death to life. Self-confidence to defeat. Scene three, social disaster to social triumph. But the three scenes become a sequence because another, greater value rides over the top, subordinating the others, and that is the job. At the beginning of the sequence, she has no job. The third scene becomes a sequence climax because here, social success wins her the job. From her point of view, the job is a value of such magnitude she risked her life for it. Scenes turn in minor but significant ways. A series of scenes builds a sequence that turns in a moderate, more impactful way. A series of sequences builds the next largest structure, the act, a movement that climaxes on a major reversal in the value-charged condition of the character's life. The difference between a basic scene, a scene that climaxes a sequence, and a scene that climaxes an act is the degree of change, or more precisely, the degree of impact that change has, for better or worse, on the characters, either on their inner life, personal relationships, their fortunes in the world, or some combination of all these. An act is a series of sequences that peaks in a climactic scene that causes a major reversal of values, more powerful in its impact than any previous sequence or scene. A series of acts builds the largest structure of all, the story. A story is simply one huge master event. When you look at the value-charged condition of the character's life at the beginning of the story, then compare it to the value charge at the end of the story, you should see the arc of the film, the great sweep of change that takes life from one condition at the opening to a changed condition at the end. This final condition, this end change, must be absolute and irreversible. Change caused by a scene could be reversed later in the story. The lovers in the previous sketch could get back together. People fall in and out and back in love again every day. A sequence could be reversed. The Midwest businesswoman could win her job only to discover that she reports to a boss she hates and wishes she were back in Terre Haute. An act climax could be reversed. A character could die, such as the Act 2 climax of E.T., and then come back to life. Why not? In a modern hospital, reviving the dead is commonplace. So, scene by sequence by act, the writer creates minor, moderate, and major change, but conceivably, each of these changes could be reversed. This is not, however, the case with the climax of the last act. It is an event of such power that the story ends on absolute and irreversible change. If you make the smallest element do its job, the deep purpose of the telling will be served. Let every phrase of dialogue or line of description either turn behavior and action or set up the conditions for change. Make your beats build scenes, scenes build sequences, sequences build acts, acts build story. For example, the scenes that turn the life of the Terre Haute protagonist from self-doubt to self-confidence, from danger to survival, from social disaster to social success, combine into a sequence that takes her from no job to job. This opening sequence sets up a series of sequences that takes her from no job to president of the corporation at the Act One climax. This Act One climax sets up an Act Two in which internecine corporate wars lead to her betrayal by friends and associates. At the second act climax, she's fired by the board of directors and out on the street. This major reversal sends her to a rival corporation, where, armed with business secrets gleaned while she was president, she quickly reaches the top again so she can enjoy destroying her previous employers. These acts arc this protagonist from the hardworking, optimistic, and honest young professional who opens the film to the ruthless, cynical, and corrupt veteran of corporate wars who ends the film. Absolute, irreversible change.